Welcome to the CEN show, where we present the voice of the community. The CommunityEducationNetwork.com is a platform to aid the effort of self and collective improvement. On Monday, November 22nd, Professor Ayman Rob presented an excellent analysis of the current court cases related to racial issues and also Brother Malcolm X. This is a must hear. Let's take a look and how you can access this show. Okay. This is one way we can. This is YouTube, and you can go to CommunityEducationNetwork.network, where we have 84 subscribers. And this is the recording from Conscious Corner. It's the Black Community Forum with Professor Ayman Ra, Brother Joe Hembrick, Brother Doctor, and Brother Mashinda. Okay, that's one way you can access it. Here's another way. Okay, here you go. The CEN show. On the CEN website, and you can go to podcasts and just scroll down, and you have the audio of Conscious Corner from Monday. So excellent show. I encourage everyone to listen to that. All right. So I'm your host, Rasaki Mascani, and tonight's topic is macro and micro relationships. How to begin the reconciliation process from the four R's that Brother Peter Rogers did from his previous podcast we did with him. So he is our guest this evening, and we're going to call him. He's a website professor of ours, even though we have Professor Ayman Rob. So we're going to call him a professor also. So, you know, we have a Grandmaster Professor Ayman Ra, with his excellent scholarship, and we appreciate all his dedication and contributions to the website and the podcast. But I recognize Brother Peter as a professor also, because when he was on with his wife, he immediately went into some commentation that seemed like he was a professor for many years, in my opinion. So, you know, he agreed to be a part of this podcast team, and we're going to call him Professor Peter or Professor Rogers, whatever he prefers. So I want to say good evening to Professor Rogers. How are you? And can you please begin your presentation?
Absolutely. Well, good evening, everybody. And, you know, as we were talking a bit, I wanted to, before I get into my presentation, I actually want to talk about what happened today, which actually kind of leads in to my presentation. As you know, on the news, we got the word that we had guilty verdicts in the case down in Brunswick, Georgia, with the Ahmaud Arbery murder. And a couple of the comments that I was listening to, really much more than some of the more obvious ones, was a brother from the Poor People's Movement down there. And he said a couple things that I thought were interesting and I thought would be kind of apropos for what we're going to talk about tonight. He said, for one...
Are you talking about Reverend Barber?
Reverend Barber, that's right. And he talked about, you know, while we're celebrating this verdict, it shouldn't even have happened in the first place. So while we're talking about, yeah, we got a victory, it should have happened in the first place. And then the second thing is, this has to stop being a surprise when justice is actually served. And when I go back and I look at what happened to Mr. Arbery, and you start thinking, what actually did this? Well, it all falls down to one thing, and that's called relationship. We have macro and micro relationships as we go through life. A lot of the stuff we talk about, really, when you break it all down, it's all about relationships. It's how we interact to each other as African Americans. It's how we interact with the government towards us, different entities of the government, how we relate to each other on a one-on-one or on a larger scale basis. But really, we also need to talk about one of the biggest relationships we have in terms of the most micro relationship is, and that's the relationship you have to have with yourself. So your first micro relationship is with you. And I had four questions I had to ask myself about your first relationship with you. Are you comfortable enough to define yourself to yourself? In other words, do you allow other people to define who you are based on their standards, or can you define yourself on your own standards? And can you stand on that without being moved? And one of the things that I have found in listening to some of the commentary from some of the presentations before is we always talk a lot about how we had to act. We had to be at our best when they were at their worst. And I look at that and I ask myself that next question. I said, am I enough without all the accoutrements? Because, you know, sometimes I look at this thing and I came up with this word called RICON, R-I-K-O-N. And our RICON stands for the right kind of Negro. You know, there's that Negro when you move in and they go like, oh, he's different. Yeah, I'm not intimidating. I can actually speak English or whatever it is that your standards define me by. No, you don't get to do that. I don't get to be your RICON. That's what happened with Arbery. He wasn't their right kind of Negro because he's dropping through their part of town. Sorry, we can't be defined by that anymore. Do I have to be exemplary to accept your aberrant behavior? So do I have to pull out all the stops to deal with your lowest, which is the other thing I looked at when we were talking about this before. And I'll go back through the four R's real quick when I get through the little introduction. Do I always have to be on my best to accept your worst? And that's on a macro and a micro level. Well, I'll go into that a little bit more. And are you, and this, I think, when we're talking about equity in the country today, I think this is really the key in about the relationship between the power structure as it is and the population. And I said to this, myself this question, are you willing to put down power in order to achieve equity? Because when you take a look at the power structure in this country, the power structure has been structured so that this group wins, but it has to balance that out by this group losing. So are you really willing to step back and have that power, or are you willing to take the consequences of that, which might be conflict, might be straight up revolution, as we've seen in other places when people simply get to the point of they tired of it. Because one thing that I looked at when I was listening to a lot of the comments today that was going on, as well as the cases that have been going on for the last couple of years and for the last 40 years, Black folks are tired of using two words, at least. I myself, I'm tired of at least. I'm tired of at least on a macro level, and I also get tired of at least on a micro level. Well, at least my daughter cleaned up the room, kinda, maybe, sorta. No, you need to do it to the standard that I put it there for. Well, at least this happened, blah, blah, blah. Well, at least has to stop being our mantra. I said this before, and I said, you know, one of the biggest differences I see between the African-American population and the rest of the population here is two words. White folks have expectations. We have hope. I'd like to get me some expectation. I want to know when I go somewhere, I have an expectation to be treated the exact same way as everybody else. I have the expectation when I'm walking down the street that I am not going to be judged and looked at just because of the color of my skin. The color of my skin shouldn't define and give you right or license to do anything to me that you wouldn't do to somebody else who is not in my skin color. Now, that sounds a little utopian based on where we are, but that's what we're supposed to be looking at. If that's what we claim in the laws of this country, and that's the relationship that they have established for us, quote unquote, legally, then it's time for the country to start living up to that or start living with the consequences. So when I look at that on that level, one other thing I looked at from a micro level is getting ourselves together. You know, a wall is only as strong as the bricks and the mortar in it. And each brick has to have its own strength. It has to maintain that integrity of that wall, and that wall is going to fall. So one of the things that I've looked at with us is, you know, for example, I've been married for 30 plus years. My wife and I've been together for 35 years. We've been married for 30. And we've just, you know, we've gone through up, down. We've had financial gain, financial loss. Houses gained, houses lost. But we work as a team. And it takes an effort to get there. You have to have that determination to work within that structure and work within that choice that was made. And I want to go back before I go into this next section. Let me just kind of review the four R's real quick when I talk about the overall relationship. To have a real relationship, you need to have four R's. The first R is recognition. That's recognition of the good, recognition of the bad. You can't repair or fix anything unless you recognize where you're at. And the other thing with recognition is you can't recognize what you won't see. So whatever is in the way in that type of relationship is trying to recognize things. You can't fix what you won't. You can't fix what you won't recognize, and you cannot recognize what you won't look at. The next part of that was repentance. It's an absolute understanding of what the behavior does to somebody else, not just where you define it. You don't get to define what the hurt is to somebody else. They define that. It's like we were talking earlier about when we talk about slavery, Jim Crow. Those are gigantic, like gigantic stones that fall into a lake. We want to deal with the stone, but we need to deal with the ripple effect, because that's been going on for 157 years and it's still going on. Yeah, the ripples are a little smaller and it's getting better, but they're still there. And there has to be a recognition of not just the stone being dropped in there, but the recognition of the ripple effect as well. Number three, you have to have repair. You have to be able to fix what you've recognized and what you have said you are repentant of. So now that we've got repentance, now we need repair. And once you get into repair, repair can take a lot of ways or means. It could be money, it could be time, it could be laws, it could be all sorts of stuff, but there needs to be repair. And then after repair, we have reconciliation, where we can restore the relationship, or conciliation, which I don't think we've ever gotten to in this country yet, so we can actually have an actual relationship that's beneficial to both sides. And on a macro level, that works, but that also works on a micro level, one-on-one with each other. And so one of the things I've always asked myself is, if I go back to those four R's and I ask myself, if you can't repent of an aberrant behavior through thought or deed, then you can't repair it. If you can't repair it, you can't reconcile. And one of the biggest problems that I see in the one-on-one as well as in the macro is a lot of times we don't recognize there's a problem. Or we want people to recognize a problem where we define the problem should be. And that's a relationship killer. There's things my wife tells me about me that I'm going, I ain't that way. And you start looking at the fruit and you go, well, maybe I do that. So I have to take a look at that. And I have to be willing to look at those things and see not whether I'm right or wrong. If you want to right fight, you can right fight all you want. You can right fight your way right through the courtroom and right out the door. But do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? And one of the things that we get into in relationships, especially one-on-one, is right fighting. I'm right, you're wrong. I don't know why she likes a $500 purse. I'm the kind of guy, give me a $20 purse and leave the other $480 in the purse. I deal with the money rather than the purse. But whatever jollies people get out of whatever they do, I deal with it. Now, as long as it ain't illegal, immoral, gonna hurt the family in some way, I just accept it. One of the things that I had to learn in 30 years, and I'm still learning it, is I don't always have to understand why somebody does something in order to accept it. Like I said, unless it's immoral, illegal, detrimental to the family, detrimental to herself, detrimental to me, sometimes it's just a quirk. You just deal with it. Like, now, I ain't going to let her break me, you know, over no $1,000 purse. That ain't happening. But, you know, same thing with me. I collect jerseys, but I don't collect, you know, $300 and $400, you know, my grades and all that stuff, game wardens and all that. Listen, I go and I'm kind of thrifty with it. Over 20 years, I've collected my stuff. And she understands that's a quirk of mine. It's something I like to do. I keep them out in the garage. I do my whole thing with them. But there's a give and take to that. And that same thing doesn't always happen. It happens on your job. It happens in education. It happens with it between you and your children. It happens all over the place. But what I've seen in terms of this is one thing that we've learned as a married couple is, can we put each other first? Have you defined yourself enough to be confident enough in yourself to really put somebody first? Because I noticed that if you have two kings on the same throne, nothing actually gets done. So she should be on your throne and I should be on her throne. And sometimes we end up with people on the same throne and you wonder what's happening with these power struggles or everything. And one of the problems that I see, especially in the Black community, is we don't have a whole lot of examples always to follow. So we don't always learn how to have a relationship. We don't always learn what makes a relationship work. We don't always have those examples of people to fall back on to say, we're going through this. Can you show me how? I remember I went to a marriage conference, probably about, it's been about 5 years now. And I went with a couple other married couples and we were down at UC Irvine. And they did that usual, hey, everybody stand up who's been married. You know, you just got married, and, you know, a whole bunch of people stood up. And then how many of y'all been married for 5 years? And then, you know, a lot of them sat down, and 10 years, a lot of them sat down, and 20 years, a lot of them sat down. I said, okay, they're coming up on us. And we were at about 26 years. So we got through 25, and then at 30, we had to sit down. There's only a few people left, and they got to 35. Then they just went to 40. And this couple that we were with had been the longest tenured marriage couple there. They had been married for almost 60 years. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, this is how it's done. Yeah, she's taking all you little 92714 people, and it took a couple Black folks from 90018 to show you how it's done. But one of the things that I looked at is that's great to have that knowledge base, that they went through some stuff. They can tell you some stuff they didn't just read in a book. They can tell you some stuff that they actually went through in life. So one of the things, again, going back to the four R's and reconciliation into a relationship, repair and recognition and repentance, is question I have for the evening is, where do you think we're at with the country and where do you think we're at as a people in terms of four R's? So that's my question.
That's interesting. Let's get out to Professor Rye.
Appreciate what's been asked, if I understand correctly. I want to say again, Asante Sana, which is many thanks, Brother Roger, for his just presentation and his perspective of the 4 R's and some of the commentaries that he made with regards to, we are Negro, right kind of Negro, right kind.
Yeah.
And then the issue with at least and expectation versus hope. And you dealt a little bit with skin color. When you're dealing with, and I think this is more focused on male-female relationships. Is that where we at? And
yeah,
how to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciate what you said, if I understand correctly. What are the most important criteria is you got to want to stay together.
Yep.
And that would encompass all the R's that you're talking about. Once you want to stay together, you find a way to recognize each other. That's inherent because that's who you want to be with. I mean, you know. And so you recognize that that's who you love and that's who you want to be with. That's recognition. Second, if you go to repentance? Repentance. Well, you know, repentance is a spiritual concept of seeking a forgiveness by announcing that you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Renouncing your sins and promising not to do it. When you repent, it's generally a public thing, or it could be personal in relationship. Mm-hmm. Whereas you say, you know, I was wrong, or either I don't know about many men that tell on themselves or many women that tell on themselves, you know, but. You know, if it's just about us communicating and having problems in communication and problems in finances, yeah, I messed up the money and I won't do it no more. You know, that's getting to repair and then, you know, the whole reconciliation situation of trying to mend things back together in a more better way, a recommitment to principles of communication, principles of cooperation, and principles of why we're together, and you look at that. But it's a challenge.
Yes.
You know, me and Brother Joe Hemrick, who is probably one of, you know, we've been married a long time. You know, it depends on who you're with,
right?
And if there's a sense of harmony, you can have the 4 R's, but if your mate don't want to practice them, it's a problem.
That's right.
And so you got to sit and communicate and say what we did was we had an African wedding. In an African wedding, you don't throw rice. You don't play don 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 don. You don't do all that. You choose the music you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose Must Be a Special Lady, she said, and she chose My Man. Mm-hmm. And we walk, we come together. Secondly, sweet things and bitter things, knowing that we're going to go through good times and bad times. That's the symbolism of sweet and bitter. Are we committed? Second, we had to sit down before we get married and get our terms together. And that's important. I mean, like, hey, no fighting, no arguing, no cussing, no, none of that. So, you know, that. And second, that, you know, if things get heated, we don't get into it. We wait until we can talk amicable and with respect. But we also taught to see each other as gods and goddesses, not gods that created the earth, but as far as the same respect you would give your spiritual leaders, you give each other. And so that helped a lot, you know, seeing her, you know, some people, that's my queen, or that's my this, that's my that. Well, that's good, but at the same time, we're talking about a moral and ethical and spiritual perspective of each other, that I'm not going to do nothing to hurt you.
Right.
Or hurt the family.
Right.
You understand? You know, you're royal to me, and I'm royal to you. The second, you know, you got children. Children come in play sometimes, either adopted, either, you know, through extended family concept. You know, you when you get with somebody, they not only get, it's just like when you rent an apartment, you talk about where you live and stuff. You're not only in the apartment, you're in a neighborhood.
Right.
And when you marry someone, you're in a family. And some people like to isolate, and yeah, it's just us, and we starting a new family. This is your family, your brothers and sisters ain't your family. But, you know, if that works, fine. But to me, I think that you want to know the family, and the family want to accept you as a family member. So you have not only the highest respect for her, and she has the highest respect for you, you have the highest respect for the family institution. Hers, no matter how bizarre it is. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is to know each other's history.
Yeah.
Not from the standpoint of, you know, who you was sleeping with or who you was dealing with before you met me, but you want to know, you know, as much about the person's habits and behavior. Like you talked about $500 purses. Well, I wish I'd have known that before we got married. You know, that's not part of my principles, but now that I'm in it, I got to go with it. But if you get the term together that, you know, we're going to be fiscal, we have a plan, we're going to buy a house together. Because, see, most people, when a person go buy a 500 purse, it's generally for them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like you buy your jerseys, that's for you, you mm-hmm. know. And you try to look at it in a way in which, okay, these are things that I do. I you meet a long lady, I love the shop. Well, okay, you accept that in the beginning, you can't try to change them once right, you get right. together, you know. I mean, that's my habit. That's what relaxed me. Even I just walk in the mall and just eat popcorn and drink them lemonades and go to 31 Flavors and just walk around. I just like to be where shopping's going on, even if I'm not shopping. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just a habit. I mean, mm-hmm. and if you like sport games, and you're going to watch TV. You know, people do that. You understand? I have no problem with that. But then you have to let them know where you're at, too, and give them your history and your cultural apparatus for fulfillment outside your relationship with them with regards to that they need to know. Mm-hmm. They need to know this about you. Last thing you want to do is be married to somebody and find out that's not the person that they presented to you. Mm-hmm. So that's where that recognition comes from. It includes a history, and history of the family, the history of the woman, the history of the man, history of his family, their habits, because you want to look at people holistically,
mm-hmm.
not just physically, not just mentally, and not mm-hmm. just spiritually. There's a holistic aspect to every human person. And so I just think that those are some good points you raised. And, you know, I think they'd be helpful to young people starting out. It's, you know, last thing you want to do is be 60, 75 and tell them I'm a divorce. You know? Where are you going?
You know? That's right.
You know, unless, you know, but people change, you know, people mm-hmm. change. And there are people 60 and 70 and 80 getting divorces. I mean, right. they do it. You know, they just grow apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for the sake of nobody catching the case, they separate, you know.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I just think those are some good points, and I appreciate what you were saying. But your question is, that's how I deal with the 4 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good deal. Yeah, because I think you brought up an excellent point, and I think when you talked about making a decision about you choosing stay together. And that was going to talk about a little part of that coming up is if you go into whatever search you want to do and they talk about the phases of a relationship, because I was talking to my oldest daughter about that. And I said, well, sometimes they say it's four pieces. Sometimes it says eight. I use six. And I said, the most important pieces are what I call the deal breaker phase and what I call the dream or the hope phase. If I go through my six, I got the deal breaker phase, the dream or hope phase, reality phase, the choice phase, the decision phase, and the acceptance phase. And that deal breaker phase is when you're talking to that person, when you're like Dr. Ross talking about getting that history together. Don't ignore those things that you see. You know, don't just look at the good, look at the bad too, and make sure that it meshes together with something that you want to deal with. Because understand, I had a formula. I was going to put it on a slide, but I'm just going to tell you what it is. And it deals with going from a child to an adult. And it's called P plus C times X, which means price plus cost times X. Then when you're a child, your X is zero because you ain't responsible for nothing. Price and cost are two different things. And my wife taught me this one a long time ago. About 6 years ago, I got laid off from my job. And I'd been with that company for about 16 years. So I wasn't worried so much about that. I was just thinking, am I getting 2 or 3 weeks per year plus my vacation? Because I'm sitting out the rest of the year. But so I got my nice little settlement, my little silver parachute. And we had to go buy a car because all I've been driving for 30 years are company cars. So I had to go buy a car and we were looking over some stuff and I bought her Acura and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm going to go out here and just buy me a little Elantra or something. And I said, I was coming across, I saw a little 190 and we've had 190s. My cousin had one, my mother had one. And I'm saying, maybe I could get a little baby Benz. And my wife said, oh, wait a minute. The price might be right, but we can't afford that maintenance on those cars, especially you talk about an older one and everything is $300. I'm like, no. As an adult, I see the price and I can foresee the cost. And then I can make a decision whether I'm going to pay that cost in addition to that price. A lot of our young people, they pay a very small price and then we end up absorbing the cost. And then as they get older, those numbers start switching. Like my oldest daughter, she just moved out. So now they're starting to see some of the cost. Well, they saw the price, but then they had to kind of come to the parents to deal with some costs that they didn't anticipate. So when you're seeing that price and cost, that number goes from zero to sometimes 2, 4, 10, whatever that cost multiplier becomes. And you have to make a decision on whether or not you want to pay that cost. And I look at that the same way I look at in a relationship. When you decide to be with this person and you make that choice and you make that commitment, are you willing to A, pay that price? That's when you learn who they are. And B, are you willing to pay the cost going forward for whatever may come with that person? So hopefully what you do is you see in the baggage port gets on the plane and then go get bagged when you got to go pick it up out of baggage claim later on, because that's what you bought. And like Dr. Ross says, people do change. You know, in fact, I was looking through the Bureau of Labor Statistics for some data, and then I went to something else, and then I finally ended up in Marriage and Family Statistics. They actually said the fastest group of people getting divorced are people over 60. So, and I'm sitting there like, dang, did you really get through that phase of any of this stuff? Maybe you start off and you was accepting some of those things that were deal breakers. I remember my wife and I got in an argument when we were dating 30 some years ago. And I said, yeah, there's a few things I don't do. Right now, I don't date women with children. I was 22. I said, I just don't need the extra. I had a hard enough time just dealing with one person rather than having to deal with this person, their child or children, another person, another father, another family, all the aunts and uncles on this side, all the aunts and uncles on that side. And I'm going to be standing here like, that ain't me. That my truth for me is I can't handle it. I ain't going to do it. It ain't fair to me. It ain't fair to her. It ain't fair to these kids. It ain't fair to that family. So I knew enough about myself. And she kind of said to me, well, what's wrong with that? And I had to say to her, you got some kids you ain't telling me about? Because let's get that on the table right now. Because you're taking this way too personal for somebody that don't have no kids, at least that I don't think you do. But that was, you know, that was what I talked about, those deal breakers. And I've talked to my daughters about that. I said, look, if there are things that you simply say that don't work for me, then cut it, drop it. You have a right. Again, if you define yourself enough and are comfortable enough in your own skin to define yourself, as well as understand, I'm not going to be treated a certain way. I'm not going to tolerate the at least mentality. Then when those deal breakers come up and you say, hey, you know what? That's something I don't deal with. Is that something that you're willing to work on, especially if it's criminal, illegal, immoral, whatever it is, then maybe there's a time when you just have to back out of that one and go, save myself from that one. But I ask myself that question and you say, you know what? Again, your first relationship is with you. If you can't define you for you and be happy within yourself, I think you have a hard time making anybody else happy because your expectations of them is to fix you rather than you bringing a healthy self to a relationship and being a contributory partner in an equally contributory relationship. It has never been my job to fix Sandra, and it's never been Sandra's job to fix me. It's always been her job to bring her healthiest self into this relationship and my job to bring my healthiest self into a relationship. And again, going back to those four R's, there are things that I know based upon just the way I am, where I was raised, who I was raised by, where I went to school, what experiences I've had both at home and out in the world that have shaped me, just like she's had experiences from where she was born, how she is, who raised her, where she went to school, her things out in the world that have shaped her. And I look at that and I go, I'm willing to accept those things the same way she's willing to accept these things from me without having to go, but here's caveat number A through Z. You need to change this, 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 because I'm saying that's probably not going to happen. If that's what you're looking for, if you need me to do a complete makeover, I had to ask myself this other question. Again, am I enough without all the accoutrements? If I don't have the house, am I enough? If I don't have the car, am I enough? If I don't have the job title, am I enough? Because not saying those things aren't important. And it's not, it is important to be able to provide a home, be able to provide a life. But my thing is, do you want a life or do you want a lifestyle? Because if you have the life, you can develop the lifestyle that you want. But if you're coming in and you want a lifestyle without establishing a life, you're fronting. And that's where I think a lot of our stuff comes in. So I'm going to be quiet for a minute and open it back up to anybody else on the floor.
Okay, let's go to Brother Hembrick, because I want to provide a little information and ask a few questions too. Brother Hembrick? Brother Hembrick, he may have stepped away. So let me go here.
You may be on mute. Okay.
Okay, so now, when you talk about the four R's, so are we relating this? Okay, I know we move into relationships with a mate, but we're talking about also the relationships with the racial dynamics of our country, right?
Absolutely.
So now my thing is the first R, which is recognition, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Now, if you take a look at Black folk, do they really recognize what's in front of them and what's going on? Because we went through slavery and we went through a a whole host of things, you know, Jim Crow, civil rights. I mean, we've been through a lot. And with the assimilation process, you know, with the dehumanization process that went on, can you recognize what's going on when you are kind of brainwashed and then traumatized by what we've been through? So I think that recognition stage is a very critical stage, because you have to recognize that you've been through a transformation process mentally, physically, spiritually. You had certain religions forced upon you. I was talking to somebody today, and they were saying that in the South, I guess during slavery time, you wasn't allowed to read. And when you were given the opportunity to read, you start reading the Bible. Mm-hmm. And then you're getting into a belief system versus a knowledgeable system. And you got to believe and you got to trust in what somebody's saying and this and that. So when it comes to this recognition, do you really recognize really what's going on when it comes to the racial dynamics of this country? Like, you have a lot of people confused about what the word racism is. So when you know, and it's so many things that come at you, whereas it's kind of, I think it's very difficult for people to recognize the racial dynamics that's really going on, to the point where you can start getting to the other R's. So with that being said, can you comment on that? And you also, Professor Rock.
I would say, if I was looking at this from a macro level of us in relation to the country, we ain't even looking at the other three. We can barely get anything in this country to even recognize what's going on, because I think we have our own trauma to deal with on one hand, like you mentioned, but the power structure that's in place doesn't want to recognize the extent of the damage. For example, when somebody comes in and, you know, we have the shoplifting laws here about, you know, $950 and we give you a misdemeanor and call it a day. But do you recognize the fact that there are stores that are closing, people are losing jobs? From them losing those jobs, they may be losing homes, they may be losing kids, there's a whole ripple effect of a chain that goes on. And I don't think the power structure in this country has recognized what that damage actually is. In fact, they want to define what the damage is rather than allowing the person, the victims, to understand it themselves and then be able to define that damage back to them. One of the things that I had put down in my notes, and I was probably going to save it for another time, but I'll just give a preview of it, are the nine words that will save your life. And one of the first two words is, I'm sorry. And one of the things when I say about I'm sorry is, I'm sorry is actually, in fact, like my notes, I'm sorry is actually less about affixing blame and more about recognizing pain. When you say I'm sorry, you go to a funeral, you say, man, I'm sorry for your loss. I didn't kill him. I didn't kill the person, but I'm sorrowful for you because I empathize with your loss. I empathize with your condition. So I'm not admitting no blame. What I'm doing is I'm recognizing your situation. So when you have a situation, again, on a micro or macro level, when you don't get that first step going of even recognizing that you've been wrong, which is where I think the country is still struggling with. I don't think there's been a full recognition because it hasn't been completely defined even for ourselves yet to know what the full damage has been. So when we talk about that, I think, yeah, absolutely. In terms of recognition, we on our, maybe we got to the E a little bit, but we got a long way to go.
Okay, Professor Ron.
Okay. just a minute. Derry, let me call you right back. I'm on Zoom. Hey, look here. You know, and Rasha Key, you're right. Oppression, racial oppression has caused a lot of psychological self issues and how we see each other issues. The negative words that we apply to each other, even in song and music. The denigration and the deprivation and the destruction of our character by this racial system caused an inferiority complex, causing an enormous amount of issues. The social stratification, you know, most people don't want to deal with it when it comes down to relationships. Why many young men can get married, but many young girls are going unmarried. Yep. And a lot of it is because we don't train them to prepare for marriage or longevity in relationship. Right. That's something they have to choose. Rather than seeing it as a social stratification for upward mobility, strong family, we just, hey, you know, let kids go. We have a lot of successful relationships. You know, it's very different. Our mothers and fathers most likely were successful relationships. Even if with the problems they may have had, that you may have drank, but at least they stayed together. There were defined roles historically. You're going to be the housekeeper, I'm going to go out and make the money. I'll take care of the house and the bills. You just take care of the family and blah, 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 blah. When you have the disproportionate amount of Black men arrested, the disproportionate of black men that are suffering from not just incarceration, but life expectancy, the drug, the impact of drugs, the impact of economic losses, whereas racial discrimination in hiring and employment, the lack of vocational and educational guidance at an early age and motivating that when young men want to be hustlers and participate in lumping in street life as a glorification, as an identity. From motorcycle clubs to, you know, various forms of men that just, you know, just sports fans, fanatics. You know, that's what a fan means, fanatic.
Yep.
And so it can interfere with relationships and with relationship with yourself. So racism is very key to male-female relationships. I taught this class for years at Cal State Long Beach. A large percentage of Black women, specifically, according to the Bureau of Census, United States Census, they say close to 40% of Black women won't even be asked to get married. So now they go to lesbianism. That impacts. You see more lesbianism and what is it, all them LGBT movement is catching on. You see it on television. You see it on as an alternative to male-female relationship. Then you see interracial. Interracial not only from the standpoint of relationship. Of mating and getting together, but white people adopting Black children. Very seldom do they let a Black parent adopt a white kid, but they would let whites adopt Black kids. I'm telling you, man, it's deep. It's deep. You know, there's a lot of social stratifications people don't factor in. I think if I can just teach you this, this will work. Not understanding, as Rasha Key rightfully the role of oppression. Look at the adoption rate. Look at, you say you go to Audubon, you went to Audubon, right? Now they say close to 70 to 80% of African American males there do not live with their biological parents.
That's right. That's right.
Foster parenting. Are they teaching the importance of male? You're gonna get old. You need somebody.
Yep.
Get a personality and a mentality of learning how to get along.
That's right.
And work at the give and take. It's hard, bro.
That's right. It is.
But this comes from developing a scientific approach to these solutions that my son be talking about restorative justice. You know, he's a principal. You know, patience. As you were saying, the give and take type of situation, but at the same time, it's not a win-lose situation. It's a, hey, I'd rather lose the point than lose the person.
Right. That's right.
Then I can always go back to the person to make the point. But if I lose the person, I can never make the point.
That's right.
So no violence, no fussing, no arguing. Male-female relationships are changing.
Yeah.
It's about just relationships. Yeah. Sometimes you have as people now, you know, you used to go to the sister and say, you know, you dating them, you got a man, you know. And you gotta say, do you have a man or a woman? and she had to ask you, do you got a man or woman or a man? You know. Uh-huh. Because of the down low thing in Atlanta. I mean, uh-huh. And they don't even count that as being gay. They just count that as gay experiences. Uh-huh. And experimental. I mean, it's deep, brother. I do you, you do me. I mean, you know.
That's right.
I mean, you'd be surprised what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. That's a good point you raised. You have to take under consideration that this is all caused by oppression and the lack of a cultural apparatus that dictates your identity, your values, your morale, your morals and ethics, and your understanding of the world and your purpose of living. See, without purpose, you know, hey, you just drifted. But anyway.
Now, let's see if it's Brother Hembrick around. Brother Hembrick, are you there? Yes, he is.
Getting ready to go to the airport, pick my daughter up, so I haven't been listening to a whole lot.
Have you heard anything? Because we want you to chime in for a minute before you. Can you have any time to chime in?
Yeah. I listened somewhat when he was talking about the R's and whatnot. And, relationships, maintaining them is rough. You know, it's a give and take. You have to can't think of right now, but you know, it's hard, good times, bad times. You know, people change some, and then you still have to adjust to see if you still want to stay in it. You know, I know if my daughter hadn't come along, I probably would have been in the wind. But once she came, I wasn't leaving, you know, for nobody else to deal with it. So I just sucked it up and just started parenting. But, you know, folks, you know, you come in, you know, burlap drawers and people try to put silk drawers on you, so to speak. That sort of thing. You've been through that. Then the religious thing can cause some issues also if you are not, being unevenly yoked, all that, you know, because I had a plan. Well, we had a plan. Well, I had a plan. She wasn't with it. We come from two totally different, diverse backgrounds. And I had planned to, make a whole lot of money through a real estate. And I had a plan, like a 5-year plan, to live off one salary and put the rest into property just for 5 years. I got that plan from, you know, another person, and she agreed. And when we got to doing it, she didn't last for 6 months. It really teed me off. I still was able to acquire some, but I could have had, you know, a lot more if she'd have, you know, stuck with the plan. But anyway, you have to grow, you have to decide. That word is escaping me right now. Compromise, that's what I'm looking for. That's big if you're going to maintain relationships, compromise on both sides. And then all the stuff going on today, like Brother Rob was saying, man, that's another world that I have yet to be able to decipher. Some of the personalities in the LGBTQ area I found to be real bizarre. Some I've never really encountered how some of the personalities are with those folks, and I see how they are, how they are. But anyway, as far as, you know, that stuff being applied to our relationship to this country, I didn't hear that addressed too much. We kept it on the relationship side. I never heard that part answered when the brother put that out there about, you know, applying that to our relationship to this country. And the good kind of Negro concept he spoke about, I definitely can identify with that, because, like, people like me and Brother Raw, you know, we kind of deemed or viewed as, you know, radical, militant, nationalistic, if you will. But those are good kind of Negroes who call us, you know, the troublemakers. So that's what we call them. 'Cause they don't want to rock the boat. And they satisfy where they are, you know, because they fear the sting of the lash from the past. And, you know, people have to decide for themselves. But I get to what the brother presented about first coming to grips with yourself. You have to know who you are, you know. And I found, I was doing this survey during the crack era. And it seemed like, to me, just from my observation, the people that could be comfortable with themselves kind of, you know, bypassed and made through that. But I know some folks who, they have to have people around them, they have to have that sort of thing. Those are the ones that was getting sprung. So you have to come to grips with yourself. You need to look within yourself, follow your own self, and don't let others influence you about a lot of things, because that's what's wrong with a lot of these youngsters. I know I did a survey with the juveniles some years back, and 80% of the kids that were in juvenile hall were in there because they were going along with somebody that's not really what they wanted to do, but they following somebody and got caught up. So I always teach mine to, you know, I can deal with the decision that you make, but let it be your choice, your decision. Don't be doing it because somebody else is. And I've always been like that my whole life, been like a lone wolf, you know, especially when folks get off to doing things that could cost you your freedom and whatnot. I put a serious break on that. But that's all. I really, that's some of the stuff I caught. But like I said, and I love this quote when I first heard him say that, if a person comes with burlap drawers, don't try to put no silk drawers on. So that was old street vernacular from back in the day. So but that's all. But I do think we need to dig into more about how those things apply to our relationship to this country.
Oh, excellent. All right, Brother Rogers, back at you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think at this point we need to take a second crack and look more at a macro level as this really applies. So I think going forward, I'm going to go back in and do a little bit more researching and things like that. And I think that'll be part two of this, because there are really two separate subjects that really need to be handled in two very different ways. One of the things that I do look at is from, of course, and it's kind of come from the engineering background, I can't fix the molecule unless I fix the nucleus. So one of the things that I deal with is I look at it from, we can have the greatest macro relationship, but if we don't have a micro relationships together, it's going to fall apart from the inside out. So that's one of the things I think I agree with the brother there about. We do want to talk a little bit more about this, and hopefully in the next time we can expand primarily on the macro side and figure out, A, where are we really at? B, what are the strategies that we think need to actually occur in order to get through to at least on the way to the next R? And that would be, I think, something that would be really valuable in exploring and going forward from there. I did want to say, just kind of just sum it up, is, you know, we hear a lot about relationships are hard and they're difficult. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I also want to say what Professor Ross said. It's a choice. It's a decision. You know, everything we do, some of the decisions we make are some of these little pre-programmed hurts, oppressions, things that we have seen over and over. It's funny how one thing always replicates itself. It replicates itself. Apple trees fall, apple seeds fall, makes new apple trees. Well, when you are seeing the same thing over and over again, when your father's father wasn't there, your father ain't there, and now you a father, what do you think's going to happen? It's a question I've always had is, I hate to quote this guy, but I will quote him. I don't know why I was watching this, but Dr. Phil, I watched this about 6 months ago, and he was talking to some, I think it was a 15-year-old kid, and he was acting out and acting a fool and everything. And they said, oh, he's the cause of all our problems and everything. And then he started talking to the parents, and he said, why are you worried about what he's doing when this is exactly what I would expect him to do based upon the situation he's living in and has lived under? So when someone's acting out, not making an excuse for it, but why be surprised when they act out because of the social pressures and the oppression that has pushed them into those type of decisions? When we look at the out of wedlocks with us, the hypersexuality, the denigration of women, the drug use, based upon what our folks have been going through since we got here, our initial deal breaker just landing on these shores, why would you not expect there to be some aberrational behavior based upon what we've gone through and are still dealing with? So the question is not to make an excuse for it, but to make the recognition of this is all coming out of a mass trauma event that for a lot of this time in this country, nobody has wanted to recognize, even to a certain point ourselves. We're too busy just trying to go along, get along, and be along rather than really sitting down. And I think in forums like this, taking this time to kind of self-diagnose and do some self-soul searching on ourselves as men and ourselves as Black men, ourselves as Black men in America, and dealing with how do we, as the leaders of our families, communities, deal with our own trauma, turn it into something that we can use, and then lead other folks. And I think that's a whole set of courses all down the line. But I did want to say thank you to everybody, to really just chiming in, because there are tons of perspectives on this and a lot of things that we can go over back and forth and back and forth. And again, there's no, this isn't about right fighting, which is one of the things we talk a lot about in relationships. It's what is right, not am I right. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Brother Rashiki.
All right. Well, yeah, I would like to extend this. And then, you know, I'm looking forward to we coming up on 1 year. We have an anniversary show that's coming up on December 15th, if I'm not mistaken. Or, yeah, I think it's December 15th. And we want to get...
What's going on?
We're going to have an anniversary show on December 15th. You there, Professor Rob? He kind of froze up. But
is that a Wednesday?
Yeah. It's 3 weeks, I think, from today.
Can you say that again?
We're coming up on the first year of the CEN show, a full year, and we're going to have an 1 year anniversary show with hopefully all the team.
You're freezing, Rusty.
I'm freezing right now.
No, you're not right now.
Okay, yeah, it says the internet connection is unstable, so that was that was causing an issue. But yeah, I want to talk more about solutions and the applications, and so we'll be talking about that more coming up in the next in our second year. Then of course the Conscious Corner started. I think we're in a half year of the Conscious Corner, so. Yeah, we want to, you know, get things moving forward where actually we can give some material out to people that they could actually, I'm not saying they can't use what we're talking about, but be a little bit more solutionary and applicable of what, how people can apply what we're talking about. So I would like to thank everybody. It was a good start to the next show. And Brother Peter, please stay on when we end this, because I want to ask you a question. So next week's guests are two people that Brother Hembrick introduced me to. We got Marlon Potts and Ernest Hall. And the topic is Coming Up Compton. So they're going to be digging into the evolution from the 50s to the 70s of the city of Compton in California. So that should be very interesting. I know Professor Ra and Brother Hembrick contribute a lot to that. So looking forward to that. That should be excellent. So, okay. So I'm going to say each one.
Don't forget Monday, we're going to have Kumba Montgomery. Kumba Roberts, Omar Montgomery, president of the NAACP out of rural Colorado, and director of diversity for Cherry Creek Unified School District in Denver. He'll be speaking.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's a classmate of mine. So I'm looking forward to that also.
All right.
Okay, everybody. So each one to each one in Conscious Corner. Mm-hmm. And we will do this again next week.
All right. Later.